I'm Pat, and this is Mike, and we're the parents of a compulsive gambler. The reason we tried with this illustration is because over a period of 10 years, only of the last three that we realized our son had a gambling problem, we struggled back and forth as to how to fix our son. For a while, we'd go his way and try his approach. For a while, we'd go my way and try that approach. And as the red bandana shows, our son kept getting more and more in the red. What we were doing was not working. But first, before we get to how we've dealt with it and how it's impacted our family, we want to start at the beginning and tell you a little bit about our family.
I guess we're a pretty typical family. Both of us born and raised in Minnesota. We have three boys. They're all jocks. They took after their mother. Both Pat and I worked in the Twin City area and started our family. I worked for a big company, and they transferred me to Texas, and we lived down there for a while, and I coached sports with the boys, and we were really active in our church, and just had lots of friends, lots of family activities, got together on all the holidays, and everything was great and pretty typical. Apple pie, Chevrolet, just the American family.
He forgot to say station wagon. We had that, too. And, we tried to do everything that you hear on TV that you can do for your kids. Volunteer at their schools. I did. Coach their teams, which Mike did. Go on vacations together. Do all this. And we did. I even worked in a church for a while in children's ministry and planned activities that my kids participated in. So we really thought we were just doing everything right with our kids. Our oldest and youngest were very compliable, easygoing. We'd, say to do something, fine, it was no big deal, did a lot. They were very, very easy for us.
Yeah, as Pat said, each of our boys kind of had their own personality. Our middle son, however, he always had a little spark in his eye. And he'd always get blamed for something, even if he didn't do it, because he looked like the little kid that swallowed the goldfish, He just always... But always, he was a great athlete, but he was a tough little guy. He always had his own little way about things.
And then towards high school, the challenges became a lot greater. He started kind of shutting down in school, and so everything that we thought was going on with him when the financial losses came, we thought was just a result of his having this rebellious nature, this rebellious personality. After high school, he barely graduated, but after high school, we had enrolled him, or I thought we had enrolled him in a junior college in the area, and I was asking about his teachers and his classes, and he was giving me names and everything, but I never saw grades. And so I called the school, and they said I could not get the grades because he was 18. So being a creative mother, I called the office and said I had never had my check cashed, which I hadn't. And they said, well, we never received it. So where was the tuition going? Still gambling didn't even enter my mind. I don't know if it was naive or not having an impact. We just thought that was just more of the rebellious nature. He did then finally go to Brown Institute, and grades started out real high there, but then went lower, but he did graduate from there. But I think he looked exhausted all the time, so he must have been going to school by day and to the casino by night.
I kind of like to go to the casino once in a while. I'm sorry to say, I do. I traveled to Las Vegas all the time on business. We'd have trade shows, and it was just entertainment. I'd go, and I told Pat, I said, well, I'd take $100, and I can make that last for a couple nights and have a few drinks. And I enjoy myself. So I never really thought anything about gambling, and I know we went on a couple of cruises, and after dinner I'd go and spend $20 or whatever, but it was no big deal, and I just thought of it as entertainment. So as this gambling thing started to arise, I just had a different perspective over it.
And we wore black and white tonight just to show you how opposite we were in our approaches. I've always hated gambling, even before I knew that Brian gambled. I always have had a fear of even going to Las Vegas, fearing that something bad would happen to me. Just didn't like the environment. When we would go on cruises, we had a deal that after dinner, we'd go dance a couple dances, and he'd walk me back to the room, my husband would, and then he'd go gamble for as long as he wanted. I just never wanted any part of it. And I don't know, that's just the opposite. This is within one family, so maybe it's a mother's inner gut or inner intuition that did that. But then when our son was about 24, he got a job up in Brainerd, and that was the first time he told us that he had a gambling problem. And this is after years of us, you know, getting calls from creditors and just me in tears on the phone trying to negotiate paying off cards and so forth. But he said, "Mom, you don't have to worry anymore." And I said, "Well, why not?" And he said, "Because they take your picture at the door of the casino. And so then if you ever come to the casino door, they won't let you in." And I'm all happy about this. And then now I look back and think, you know, what part of duh don't you understand? I mean, but I'm sure that was, I was just looking for an answer that would just solve all the problems. But, you know, I should have thought right away it would be easy for a person to disguise themselves anyway. You know, what's the one picture? So that was the first time that really didn't work. So then we got more drastic in our thinking of solutions.
As Pat mentioned, high school was really tough, tremendous activity. I'm sure that it was one of those things that, you know, he had a forged license or something, and he got in the casino probably when he was 16 or 17, and, you know, he probably was going there all the time, and we had no clue. The money I gave him, you know, I'm sure it went to the casino. So as part of the school and everything else, and we knew there were some things going on, before we even really knew the gambling thing was going on, or just about the time, we needed to take some drastic steps. And a friend of mine that I worked with at the company I worked at, I didn't realize this, but he was a general in the National Guard. I had shared with him that my son wasn't maturing, at least I didn't think he was, the way he should, and he had some issues. And he told me, he says, "Well, we can take care of that." I said, "Oh, great." So I gave him my son's name and phone number and so forth. And a couple days later, my son called me. He said, "Dad, what did you do?" And he said, I said, "Well, I don't know. What do you mean?" He said, "Well, I got all these people calling me all the time. And they're asking me if I know General Hanula, you know. So they want me to come down." I said, "Well, why don't you go down and talk to him?" I don't want to go. And I said, "Well, whatever." So this persisted for week after weekend. So finally he went in and talked to a recruiter, and he ended up enlisting in the National Guard. And I'll let you take over.
As I'm narrowing my way in anyway. So what we thought would be a really great way to teach our son discipline and some self-respect and pride, because we could see that in many situations there was a lot of regret, because his friends were moving on with their lives, and he was kind of like that hamster running in that little cage that goes in circles. So he enlisted, and we thought it would be a great way to get any tuition in the future paid for, that he'd be a weekend soldier and do his 2 weeks of training in the summer and make that 6-year commitment and then come out on the other side a better person. What we hadn't counted on was him getting called up to serve in Iraq. And so in the spring of fall of 2003, he called us to tell us that he was called to Iraq, and he did return safely, and we're so grateful for that. But he served there for over a year. I said they're going to have to change the name to the Army International Guard rather than National Guard. But he was in Baghdad, and had thankfully every person in his unit returned home safely, which is a miracle in itself. He came home on leave midway through his service, which was October, and we had the family over to see him, and he and his cousins and girlfriend, who was wonderful while he was over. She wrote him every day he was gone. They went out, came back, he went to bed, and we got up in the morning, he wasn't there. And he had woken his girlfriend up and said he wanted to go fishing, which, if you know my son, that would be it's either fishing, he could fish every day. And so we just assumed that that's where he had gone. And he didn't come back, and here he had gone to the casino. And we were just all just like heartbroken. But at that time, we were really at a loss for what to do because he was leaving to go back to Iraq for 2 days. And so it really wasn't a time to deal with him spending his money because each time he left, we didn't know if we were going to see him again. Well, he got back in the spring of 2005. And we thought, okay, now he's going to be so glad to be out of the National Guard, to be home, to be free, you know, to be safe, that he'll be able to move forward with his life. He had sent money home to his girlfriend. They bought a townhouse, you know, had the furniture, vehicle, and all that, and he got a job, which was wonderful. If you're in the military, people really look favorably on you for that, for hiring you, which is really nice. And then he just still was not making it financially, and, you know, their bills were going unpaid, and it just, we were starting to get phone calls. So this is when our first recognition then of the gambling problem came up, and I'll let Mike share how he handled it first of all.
I came from the school of kind of hard knocks. I was raised in South Minneapolis, and I don't know, kids disobeyed, I gave them a whack, you know, on the bottom. I didn't, and as I got older, you know, I know my kids love me to death, but we were eyeball to eyeball when things would happen. So when some of these issues came up, 3-4 in the morning, I got in the car and drove all the way from 60-70 miles to find my kid. And we sat in the car together for an hour and a half, and, you know, I'm in his face, and I'm going to solve this problem. He's going to, no more of this, no more of this. This is over right now. And, I mean, we really, I mean, he's crying, I'm crying, but I'm in his face. And then we had a reoccurrence and other issues and bills and all kinds of dilemmas. And, you know, 3-4 in the morning again, there I am. So I'm just real frustrated, and it's causing problems in our marriage. We're not getting along, and we're kind of looking at ourselves. What did we do wrong? You know, how did I, you know, our friends, they don't have this problem with their kids, you know, with neighbors. You know, what did we do wrong here? It just really was frustrating, and we were just pulling our hair out.
Well, I was just certain that his approach was totally wrong because I lived in Never Never Land. So I used that, well, if you pay all the bills up and he gets back to square zero and you keep his girlfriend happy and you're smiling and everybody's, you know, really happy and feeling really good, then he'll appreciate it so much that this will never happen again. Well, you know how well that worked. And so he was getting it from both sides. And we were just exhausted, probably more exhausted than he was, because we were in this fix-it mode, again, like the hamster, just running, what can we do now, and what can we do now, and is she happy, and is he happy, and what if they lose their house, and what if he loses his job? Well, then the climax and the life-changing event that happened for both of us was one night our son called on his way home from work. And it was about 7:30, and I said, well, gee, you're working kind of late. Yeah, I had a meeting. And he says, I have to go, Mom. I said, okay. And it wasn't but 5 minutes later that the phone rang again. Hi, Mom. Well, hi, how are you doing? I spent my whole paycheck. I go, yeah, right. And it was dead silence on the other end. I go, you're kidding me. And I was home alone. I freaked out. I fell apart. I just like... And I was just like, what do I have to do now to fix this for him? What am I going to do? And being the enabler I was, he had told his girlfriend had told him if he did this again, he would have to move out. And so I took it upon myself to help her, saying, well, you're going to have to move out, you know, which was wrong. It should have been up to them. But he came over, and somehow, by the grace of God, from the time that I talked to him on the phone, and he came over, which is about 45 minutes, I got this just total calm about me. I was composed. I think he thought he was going to show up to some raving lunatic, which he'd seen before. He walked in the door, and I hugged him. He kind of looked at me. And we walked over. We have like a center island in our kitchen, and I had my hands on the island. He walked over, and he said, well, aren't you going to write a check for Jenny? I said, what do you mean? He said, well, what's she going to do? How is she going to live now? And I looked at him, And you know, I this is such a special moment. And I said, you know what? I didn't do this to her. You did. There was no more arguing. It was just total peace. I was able to separate it, and that's when I learned that we just had to let go, and we couldn't do it. And there, you know, like I said, there was no arguing. It was just nothing. And then shortly after that, he found out he was going to be a dad, and that just put another crimp on it. But I had a really good relationship with his girlfriend, and we talked often, but I chose just to stay out of it because I knew that she had a lot to think about. And 2 weeks after this revelation, I knew that Brian had started coming to GA, and she called me and said, would you come to a Gammonon meeting with me? And so I went. But my attitude really shined through because I grabbed the rope again. I thought, I bought these two books, and I thought, finally, after all these years, this is my handbook of how to fix my son. And so I'm typical mother, and I've shared this with our group, and one of the first things we read, and I hope I don't cry, but if I do, you forgive me, because it still bothers me to read it, thinking I was going to come to fix him and to find out the solution and to cure him once and for all. We read this line. The disease of gambling is twofold, an obsession of the mind coupled with a spiritual emptiness. It can be arrested, but never cured. And that just, again, I just had to let go. And we went through a process where you had to check things if you thought you were living with a compulsive gambler. And I just had one or two things checked off. And his girlfriend was just check, check, check. And I wanted to grab that pencil right out of her hand. It's like, no, no, no. But I stayed out. And we really worked well together in the group, you know, because I had to hear things that I didn't want to hear. But it went fine. And want to add, then shortly after that.
Okay. Well, whatever. We're just kind of ad-libbing here. But at any rate, we both joined Gammonon, and again, I was in the fix-it mode there too, but it was a real education, and to learn that this is one of the most addictive diseases there is, and then just to understand that there is no cure for it, and then you just have to maintain. And today, Brian is celebrating 2.5 years, And we have a beautiful 20-month-old little granddaughter. Brian is the best father, and he's just, GA has changed his life, and Gammonon has changed us, brought us closer together, and it's just, I don't know what we would have done without the two organizations, but it's provided a path for us to follow, and it's just it's been wonderful.
And I have come on Monday nights, and I work on myself. And I've learned so many things about myself. The 12-step program is just wonderful for life skills, period. And, you know, I learn from other people, and it's nice to be able to give back. And I've been able to tell most of the people I've wanted to tell. You know, it can become, you feel like you're by yourself. You don't want to tell everyone. There's shame. But I've, you know, shared with my family and friends, and that just gives me support, you know, because, you know, otherwise your world becomes so much alone. When I talk to my son, it's not about gambling ever. In fact, to show you something, how God has a sense of humor, he started a new job, and one of the first meetings that his boss took him to was in a casino, the one up by Brainerd. And he called me, and he said, Mom, I have to go in the casino to this meeting. And then, you know, part of me started just like fretting at home, but then I just let it go. And he did go to the meeting, and his boss even stopped by the slot machines and played for half an hour. But he said, I just had to sit there, which I'm glad he did. But in our lives, we come up with all different kinds of challenges. And what I have learned that through Gammonon is that I can't fix anybody else. I can barely fix myself. And that when I focus on myself and I can have joy in my life, it just gives me strength for all the other things that happen in our lives.
I think that's it.